and underwear merchandise from Australian factories manufactured on a royalty basis under the Kayser trademark. By the middle of the 1930s, the Australian company was producing over 15% of the total Australian full-fashioned hosiery production. And at this time, the company set up its own underwear manufacturing facilities in a property which was purchased adjoining the hosiery factory. Early in 1937, Julius Solwick, who had been joint manufacturing director with Ernest Marx, died. And the company was controlled and directed by Ernest Marx as sole managing director. Just prior to the outbreak of the war in September 1939, the company had been marketing for some months a six-thread full-fashion silk stocking with a cotton top at the retail price of 3 and 11 a pair, with a full markup to the retailer and under the Kayser brand and on a payable basis to the company. This was generally hailed as an achievement which was equaled by only one other, at that time, small competitive company. During the war years, the company's activities were diversified, and as well as stockings and underwear, which are manufactured under strict government-controlled austerity standards, tents, jungle trousers, mosquito nets, Air Force helmets and jackets, and other military equipment was manufactured for the Defense Department in substantial quantities. With the ending of the war in August 1945 came the advent of nylon yarn, firstly used to supplant silk for hosiery and shortly afterwards to take the place of rayon in the underwear field. This development and amazing technical discovery by the DuPont Company of USA was an epoch in the whole of the textile industry throughout the world. By 1950, the company was certainly the largest producer and manufacturer of nylon underwear, largely due to the ability, imagination, and foresight of the late Phil Hayman, a working director and sales manager of the company, who was then also in charge of underwear production. For the next 4 or 5 years, the company maintained and enlarged its supremacy in the nylon underwear field and held its prominent position in the production and sale of full-fashioned hosiery. The writer of the foregoing retired in June 1954 after 42 years active association and control of the distributing and manufacture of Kayser production on the Australian market. Robert, your father has suggested that following this short potted history of Kayser, with which I and my family have been for so many years connected, that I should top off in a way by saying a few words about the fur company, which of course we've all been interested in, and your father in particular, for so many years. Actually, what happened was, when Jules Solwick and I discussed joining together in 1920, I said to him, he said, well, I can't bring any cash, I can only bring stock of goods that I have for sale. And he said, of course, I know nothing about stockings. And I said, well, I know nothing about furs. So you bring it over, you bring over your stock of furs, and we'll have them valued, and I'll issue shares for the amount, and I'll try and learn that section, and you try and learn my section. That's how the entry of Elney Michael Solwick into the fur business took place. The fur business was run entirely in conjunction with hosiery and underwear business for the whole of the 1920 to 1930 decade. And in its early days, the goods were made in a fairly large factory which we ourselves owned and ran in the top part of Flinders Lane. A very substantial business, of considerable magnitude was built up in those years by the distribution of manufactured fur garments to the retail trade of Australia. There were actually very few, only a handful of firms in Australia manufacturing and selling better grade goods to the large retail stores throughout Australia. While Solway's quick and ready activity and brain fairly quickly absorbed the problems and intricacies of the textile market and our particular section of it in particular, I, on the other hand, found very little time to delve into the difficult problem of learning the various types of furs and gaining much knowledge of their actual manufacture and technical handling. When your father decided to leave school after he finished his exams at the Geelong Grammar, I felt that the best thing to do would be to put him into the fur industry so that we'd have someone who had a thorough knowledge of the of that industry from the ground upwards, ready to step into it if conditions so warranted and if he so desired. With that in mind, I arranged with Leslie, arranged for Leslie to be apprenticed to a furrier in Melbourne, who had his offices actually in Centreway Arcade. He had a retail shop there and manufacturing section attached to it. Leslie worked there for about 1 to 2 years, I forget which, and then he was sent to London and apprenticed to P.R. Poland and Sons, a very old firm of English skin merchants who'd been in existence for some 200 years. Mr. Poland himself took quite an interest in acquainting Leslie with the intricacies of the skin game, and he learned quite a lot there. And after spending about a year or maybe a little more, I arranged for him to go to New York, where he was where he worked with a firm called J.D. Silberman and Sons, who had been established in the USA for a great many years, were one of the largest skin merchants in the whole of that country. Leslie then returned to Australia with reasonably fair working knowledge of the skin business, the various types and qualities of skins that existed and were used in the industry, and roughly an idea of how the whole thing ticked over. It is an industry very, very unique in the industrial world, and it is one that comparatively few people ever really properly master. When the financial crash came in 1929-30, and the Kayser Company put up their factory, about which I referred to previously, we had to, of course, slough off the fur transactions and trading completely from the hosiery, underwear, etc. because the American people wanted to have no part at all, which is quite understandable, of an industry which really did not concern them in the slightest. And by a special arrangement, a new company was formed, which traded as Marks and Solwick Furs Proprietary Limited, and which in the early days had to be left more or less entirely to Hal Solwick to take care of. The business had fallen away with the more or less closing up of L&E Marks and Solwick by absorption into the Kayser organization, both manufacturing and distributing, and the fur business was left as a very small entity in which Gerald Solwick and myself and Hal had a similar holding. When Gerald Solwick died in 1937, he left me a small number of shares by an arrangement we had between ourselves, so that there would not be a very awkward and almost impossible position arise from the fact that both Hal Solwick and myself had exactly equal number of shares in the company, so that I obtained a majority holding in the company, which has been the position ever since. With the passing of the years, your father gradually absorbed the pretty complete knowledge of not only the skin end of the business and the purchasing, which is a very important factor in this particular industry, but also in the processing of the goods, the manufacturing of them into garments, and the distribution of them throughout the retail stores in Australia. And over the last number of years, in effect, he has practically controlled the policy and the day-to-day business of the whole enterprise. Now, that in a broad, brief way, Robert, it gives you just a lineup of how the situation stands and how it worked out over the very many years. Well, this little story really dates back well over 50 years from 1912 to today. In fact, it's nearer 60, isn't it? So that I think, as you have asked for it, this may give you some slight indication of how things, as far as my years are concerned, and activities down those years worked out. Well, I hope you find it of more than passing interest and won't be too bored in listening to it. Cheerio, good luck, and I hope to hear from you again very soon.